Welcome to the Days for Girls podcast, a show about breaking barriers for women and girls around the world. I'm your host, Jessica Williams, Chief Communications Officer at Days for Girls International. At Days for Girls, we believe in a world where periods are never a problem. We are on a mission to shatter the stigma and limitations associated with menstruation by increasing access to sustainable period products and menstrual health education for all people with periods. Today, my guest is Danielle Kaiser, Executive Director of the Menstrual Health Hub and partner of Marami, a consulting agency focused on gender and female health innovation. Danielle is a bridge builder who specializes in driving collective impact in the menstrual health space, working to bring together and engage the broader women's health global community for better menstrual health outcomes. Prior to starting Menstrual Health Hub, Danielle helped launch and grow Menstrual Hygiene Day with WASH United and also consulted for UNICEF on menstrual health and hygiene innovations in East Africa. Hello, Danielle. It's so great to welcome you to the Days for Girls podcast. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show or the podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're calling in from Germany today. It sounds, we were just chatting before we started the recording that you're dealing with quite a bit of snow.
Yeah, it's not that it's so much. It's just that it doesn't really happen here. I think global warming has really made it really mild winters, and it feels good to be in like a winter wonderland. So yeah, I'm safely locked in at home in Berlin, Germany.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come on the show. There are so many ways that we could go with this episode today because you have such a wide breadth of work related to menstrual health. But the first thing I want to start on, which is the Menstrual Health Hub. And you helped where you launched that. But prior to doing the Menstrual Health Hub, you also launched Menstrual Hygiene Day, which is on May 28th, for those who don't know. And you did this in coordination with WASH United. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to start a day devoted to menstrual health?
Sure, absolutely. So I was working with WASH United, and together the team and I launched and grew Menstrual Hygiene Day. So way back in 2013, the organization was starting to work on menstrual hygiene management, or MHM, as it's known colloquially in the sector. And there was very little that was being done about it. And so the idea to create a day really came from thinking, well, you know, there's days around everything. We can make a day around menstrual hygiene, can't we? And so, you know, in a world like the one that we have, and we were also inspired by a dear friend, Jack Sim, who created World Toilet Day, which was officiated after 13 years of pushing it forward as a UN day that's celebrated on November 19th. We thought, well, we could probably do the same thing. So in 2013, we started making initial partner phone calls. We had a few early partners on, like Ruby Cup and a few Berlin-based enterprises and NGOs like WaterAid, and started the process. So Menstrual Hygiene Day, or as it's currently, the name is being considered to be changed, perhaps Menstruation Day or Menstrual Health Day. We can talk about that a little later. It's on the 5th. It happens during the 5th month, which is May, and that is because the period is average around 5 days long, and then on the 28th of May, because a menstrual cycle is on average 28 days, although research last year showed that it's actually 29 days. So there's significance behind the date of Menstrual Hygiene Day as well. And I worked in this role for 3 years, helping grow and launch really this international platform to kind of create a party every year, campaigns, and really shout that menstruation matters and that there's lots of different reasons why. In the time that I was there, I grew the network into over 300 partners, and it became a really nice kind of community sourced day to pick a different theme for how people could celebrate. So I remember one year was, we've got to start the conversation around menstruation. I think that was an early year. And then later on, themes were education around menstruation changes everything. So it was really nice to kind of start the global dialogue around the topic.
Well, and I should note that Days for Girls does participate in Menstrual Health Day or Menstrual Hygiene Day. And we're also a partner of yours with Menstrual Health Hub. So can you talk a little bit more about what led you to start Menstrual Health Hub?
Sure. Well, while I was working at Wash United, I really felt like, being responsible for partnerships, it was really important what the community themselves were feeling and thinking and kind of the feedback we were getting. And I really felt like I wanted to do something beyond just a day, and I wanted to do something beyond hygiene. So I started the Menstrual Health Hub with the intention to provide a place for people working across the space, not just from a water sanitation and hygiene perspective, but from all different perspectives around innovation, around coaching, around enterprise development, to be able to come and kind of check in with each other and see the progress happening around the issue. So I launched the Menstrual Health Hub in 2016 and really wanted to create just an online database and resource center where people could check out the latest research, policy, education, and innovations around the topic. And in the last few years, we've been so busy on so many different levels, whether it's on policy and advocacy and advising policymakers on what kinds of menstrual policies could be more inclusive, how they can learn from other countries who have been doing similar things, or trying to shape the global agenda and really ensure that the voices of the community are being held in consideration. We are kind of a hybrid mix of an advocacy organization and a social impact, collective impact organization, working to make sure that menstruation and the menstrual health space is professionalized, much like we're seeing happen with, how mental health in the beginning was cast aside, and now it's a fully functioning sector with plenty of research and professionals behind it as well.
One of the things that I love about your work is the memo that you send out. I think it's once a month or maybe twice a month. I'll let you tell me. There's so much amazing information for partners in the sector like Days for Girls. And I just want to say thank you, because as the communications officer for Days for Girls, it's a really great source of information.
Oh, I'm so glad that you like it. The menstrual memo is really my baby. It's something that I feel very connected to. I'm actually working on one right now that will go out this week. And for us, it was just really important to tie all of these things together in the form of a delightful news blast of victories. A lot of newsletters are about like us, we did this, we did that. And for us, it's not so much about what we've done, but really to celebrate the achievements of the community and really across different sectors. So, a lot of people working in menstrual health think that it's just about reusable pads, or just about education, or just about hormones, or just about optimizing the cycle. But no, like, menstrual health is such a complex and overarching and ubiquitous topic. I mean, the menstrual cycle goes on every day, essentially, for 40 years over the course of a woman or a bleeder's life. And that means that there's so many different ways that people can be working on it. And bringing together these diverse victories, these diverse perspectives, is really what it's all about, so that we can really lay a foundation for female health. If we can use menstrual health as the entry point to female health across the life cycle, we're more likely to be able to get really important things that happen later on down in a female's life, right? Whether that's around fertility or infertility or sexual pleasure, or the next great cycle that happens around menopause, perimenopause, and menopause. Like, all of these things don't really make any sense unless the menstrual cycle and menstrual health is contextualized and properly addressed. So the memo tries to not only celebrate those victories, but also bring in things from other areas of female health as well.
So in the spring, you mentioned that you're planning on launching a community platform. So what are your plans with that?
Oh, we're really excited about this. So the last 4 or 5 years, we've had a registry just to kind of collect information on who's doing what where around the world with regards to menstrual health. And right now we have about 800, 815 maybe different organizations, businesses, researchers, advocates, activists, you name it. If they're working on periods, they're in there, or if they're not, then they should sign up now. So we want to take all this data that's in our backend registry and be able to make it accessible for everyone so that the Menstrual Health Hub can be this place where people can truly connect with each other. I had no idea when I started this organization that we would grow to be over 800 organizations. I thought maximum, okay, how many organizations could work just on periods? But in the last few years, we've seen this topic completely explode. And much to my delight and also my capacity, I can't connect everyone as much as I want to. So creating this community platform will kind of be a thing that can operate itself in a way so people can connect directly to each other rather than relying on me, a person, as the fulcrum for those connections. So as of spring of this year, we'll be launching the community platform. In addition to that, we'll be upgrading or giving our Hive a makeover. This is the database that has all this different content around research, education, policy, and innovation. As it stands, we have about 1,300 different pieces around those four topical areas. And we're also adding a resource section just for Spanish speaking menstrual health community members. And in the future, expanding into other languages as well.
Amazing. Well, I really look forward to being a part of that, as I know Days for Girls will be. So you're doing so much. So like you're doing this and this and this. So one of the other things that you're focused on right now is this professional consulting services, I guess, outfit that you're launching called Marami. And tell us about that, because that sounds really interesting too.
Yeah. So a few years ago, when we started the Menstrual Health Hub, my two co-founders, Milena and Mariana, and I, we really wanted to create this this collective impact organization. And you know, by doing this, we've gotten to know so much about all these different areas of menstrual health and really develop all of these insights around who's doing what, where we think the field is going, where we've seen major missteps and where we see major gaps and opportunities, and also influence, you know, how investment is happening in the space, who should be investing, how should they be investing, what does that look like, what are the mechanisms, and also bringing in larger kind of corporates and you know, players that have money into the space. You know, menstrual health is finally becoming a place of interest for those who only really saw it as a marketplace for selling disposable fem care goods. But now there's so much opportunity because of femtech and periods bleeding from the margins to the mainstream. So with that, we have decided to launch a consulting wing of the Menstrual Health Hub that's called Marami, which stands for all three of our first names: Mariana, Danielle, Milena. And this is a consultancy that's focused on gender and female health innovation that helps us kind of direct money into the right places and influence corporates to do a better job in light of the rapidly changing menstrual health environment and marketplace. So far it's so good. We've been working with clients such as The Body Shop, Kohler, which is a toilet manufacturer in the U.S., MAS Holdings, which has made the material and the underwear for Thinks, and a few small companies and social enterprises, including Einhorn, which is a beloved German brand of condoms and menstrual products.
So let's talk about the professionalism of the menstrual health space. I know this is something you care about and something that you're trying to I don't know, facilitate. And so what areas do you think the field needs to really up their game?
This is such a great question. I'm really happy that we can talk about this and that people out there working on this topic can engage as well. Menstrual health has had a really interesting evolution. A lot of people get involved because it's such an emotive topic, half of the population menstruates. And, once you realize that it's like this source of oppression and discrimination and really where gender inequality starts, you can get a lot of people involved really easily. And I think that one of the things that we need to do in this space is not work for free all the time necessarily, but actually, even if it's trading services or helping out, doing like favors for each other, I think it's really important that we add value to our own work as menstrual health experts, just as business people would do, just as nonprofit consulting experts would do. The more that we give things away for free, whether they're menstrual products or our own expertise, the less likely it can be valued in society. And I think, what we have in common with Days for Girls and a lot of other menstrual organizations is that we want menstruation to be valued in society. We want to remove the shame, lift the taboo, be able to talk about it more freely, and make sure that people who are menstruating have as little problems with it as possible so they can go about their lives and be the badass people that they want to be. So, one of the important parts of professionalization is, of course, capitalism and making sure that people can get by on the great work that they're doing and not bend over backwards, burn out for something that they really care about. So a lot of our work is really around supporting others to develop their business models and make sure that this doesn't become a charity field forever. I mean, female health is a $1 billion market and industry and opportunity. We're already seeing so much happen on the technology front. And, in a number of years, like menstrual health will be a coffee table conversation, just like we're able to talk about mental health or any of the other areas of health that we deal with.
That's one of the things I love about Days for Girls. So I came on to Days for Girls last year, and I truly feel like our little tagline that says turning periods into pathways is real. And I think I see that across our organization and across other organizations in this space. It really is an opportunity for us to employ and empower and with wealth or jobs or livelihoods, outcomes for women around the world. And I'm so glad you're bringing to attention this habit that women have. And I've seen it prior to coming on Days for Girls, where we want to trade and we tend to undervalue ourselves and the services of other women around us. And I'm so glad you're bringing attention to this.
Yeah. I mean, I really appreciate you saying that because it's true. We do love this work and it's like, it's very rewarding, but that can only go get you so far. Right. I always think about it in terms of like, this space, we constantly have to assert ourselves, constantly have to create a case for why menstruation is worthy of investment. I mean, they're constantly saying there's not enough research. We can't show that this is actually having social impact. But like, if we were to use that on the other, on the flip side, did people have to create a case for Viagra to be created? All these other things that have just happened in men's health or for a patriarchal society, we're never subjected to the same kinds of questions or consideration or withholding or skepticism. And I think truly it's a gendered divide. And as women are becoming more empowered, more educated, more confident, exerting more agency, and we see that in politics, we see that in business, we see that in Hollywood, we're really seeing that like, wow, we can do this. Like we can make money on a topic that we're passionate about, we're experts around, and really stands a chance to make a huge social impact. I mean, there's not really anything that shapes a girl's life more than her experience with her bleeding. You know, whether she had supportive social environment, whether she was educated in schools, whether she had good facilities, whether she had access to affordable and hygienic menstrual products, all these things can have a very traumatizing effect. And if we can work on this ecosystem approach to ensure that those four things are in place, then I really believe incredible things can happen throughout the course of her life.
I do too. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this work, right? So one of the big things that can have a massive impact on menstrual health and hygiene is policy and legislation. Is there a particular area of that that you're passionate about or that you think would make the biggest difference in the lives of women and girls around the world or menstruators around the world?
Yeah, I'm really happy that you asked this question. We actually just wrote a blog that comments on what recently happened in Scotland. So as many listeners may know, Scotland recently passed the most progressive anti-period poverty policy in the world, which enables any menstruators in need to access products when and where they need them. And this is fantastic for a number of reasons, but there are still some limitations to what the policy does not do right. And I think what's really important that we need to keep in mind is a few things. One is around inclusivity. So I know that we often speak about women and girls, but it's really important in this day and age to have an asterisk or have some mention of inclusivity, because it's not just women and girls who menstruate, and not all people who menstruate identify as women. And so including that in the legislation, even if it's just an asterisk, can do so much for all of the non-binary and gender non-conforming conversations that are happening these days, and that we see a lot more young people taking on and feeling more comfortable with in terms of expressing their own identities. Secondly, you know, informed choice is really important. A lot of the times these period policy schemes are aimed at giving away disposable products. And whereas this might be easier, we think it's really important for girls to be able to choose which products work best for them, because, like you have a candy aisle when you go to the grocery store. So maybe you feel like chocolate, maybe you feel like jelly beans, maybe you feel like no candy at all and going to get a banana. The menstrual product selection and choice should be as bountiful as that, and really be up to a girl or a woman to be able to choose. And of course, it depends on if they have access to water and a safe place to dry or clean. They're reusable products, but it still needs to be part of those schemes. And then the last most important thing, which I'm a big proponent of, as we probably hear from this conversation, is really around language. So words like hygiene and sanitary were still overwhelmingly used in the bill by the Scottish government, as well as in the media. And because language is so powerful, terms like this can be really problematic, because they reinforce some gender-based discrimination that we might not even be cognizant of, that menstruation is inherently dirty or hygienic, or that the vagina needs to be sanitized or cleaned up. And they also insinuate that menstrual products are this, like, you know, be-all solution to the unhygienic problem of menstruation. And language is just really important, and we need to be able to, like, talk about what it is. So instead of feminine hygiene or sanitary protection or intimate areas, why don't we just call them period products or menstrual blood or vagina or vulva, and, you know, make our bodies palatable because that's what they are. So, yeah, we really are fond of, you know, being able to be critical of language, and also being able to make sure that language is used in a way that unites people and not divides them, which we can see happening in a lot of different areas of society.
Danielle, I feel like we could just talk for a really long time and I could pick your brain about this issue forever. And, but that's what the Menstrual Health Hub is for. So if people want to connect with you and the work that you're doing, where's the best place for them to go?
Our website, mhhub.org, is the best place to find us online. And then we have a really exciting Instagram where we post all about different events that are happening, feature really great artists and menstrual warriors, aka badass people and organizations in this space that we like to highlight and support the work of. Professionally, as we want to professionalize this space, LinkedIn is always a really great place to connect with me as an individual or to hear about our more kind of serious updates via our LinkedIn profile, Menstrual Health Hub.
Fantastic. And we will put all of those links in the show notes. And then I'm just going to give a plug for the Menstrual Health Memo because I think it's fantastic. So definitely sign up for the newsletter if you're interested in menstrual health and Menstrual Hygiene Day and watching the progress of this space. I highly recommend it. Thank you so much for your time, Danielle. I really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure. And keep up the great work at Days for Girls. We really love partnering with you and just have really grown so much from the partnership. We learn a lot. We're plugged into what's happening in Uganda and South Africa specifically because of your incredible colleague, Diana Nelson. And we just really want to stay on your journey as you continue to impact the lives of millions of menstruators worldwide.
Aw, thank you. The Days for Girls podcast is produced by Days for Girls International. For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit daysforgirls.org/podcast. If you'd like to support the work we do on the show, leave a rating or a review wherever you listen. Subscribe to the show and share episodes on social media or with your friends. To learn more about Days for Girls and to join our global movement, please visit daysforgirls.org. Thank you for listening. See you next time.